Welcome to So Unbecoming, a podcast for military spouses in the process of unbecoming one version of themselves in favor of another, looking to rejoin the workforce after time spent away supporting their families, the military, and its mission. We'll hear the unfiltered stories of spouses who have made or are making their way through the hiring and employment processes and hear from experts on a variety of job search and professional skills topics. I'm Jamie Muskoff, and I'm a Navy spouse who recently re-entered the workforce after a nearly six-year career gap, and I'm a student in the Doctor of Social Work program at the University of Southern California, Suzanne Dvorak Peck School of Social Work. I'm a technologist and knowledge strategist looking to apply my expertise to the grand challenge of harnessing technology for social good. My mission is to advocate for all military spouses, examine the culture around male spouse employment, and to explore how organizations can improve their social responsibility initiatives when they seek to serve our military spouse community. I'm so happy you're here. I'm incredibly grateful for your time. Let's get started. Welcome to episode 4 of So Unbecoming. This is my third week in the Doctor of Social Work program at USC. I'm honored to be learning how to be social innovators alongside my very impressive cohort mates. For the next 2 weeks, I'll be sharing my interviews with two military spouses working in the field of social work because one, the work they do deserves recognition, and two, how they navigate maintaining that career during active duty military life is something worth learning about. We talk about licensure, childcare, mentorship, overcoming personal challenges, and self-care, all great insights for military spouses, no matter what your career. And this week, I'm thrilled to share my conversation with USC MSW alumna, native New Yorker, mom, runner, and real-life superhero, clinical social worker, Alexandra Brown. Thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate the time that you're taking to do this. First, can you please tell us who you are, where you're originally from, where you are now, and how long you've been a military spouse?
Sure. My name is Alex. I'm a clinical social worker, currently working in a juvenile detention facility where I'm providing CSEC services. So CSEC stands for Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children. Basically, my role there is to do three things. The first thing is screenings. So every single youth, male and female, that comes into the hall gets screened for CSEC. And then we do prevention and harm reduction groups. So depending on the level of risk or any CSEC experience, they're either put into a prevention group or a harm reduction group. And those groups are in the different units and they're 4 times a week. And then I also do individual therapy for those that either just need extra support while they're in juvenile hall or those that have sex assault, abuse, sex trafficking, anything like that. So I've been a military spouse now for almost 11 years, and we're currently residing in San Diego, California.
Can you give us a little bit of information about what your career and your education looked like before you became a military spouse or before you became a social worker?
Sure. So previous to becoming a military spouse, I did earn a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology. I knew I wanted to be a social worker. At the time, I was working in a residential treatment facility, which was serving a population of those who were struggling with substance abuse and mental health.
Okay. And then did you pursue your MSW while you were a military spouse?
I did. It actually took me a while to go back to school for my master's, but I did. And you know, that was a really empowering time for me, I feel, looking back, because I earned my master's degree from USC. I graduated with a 3.9 GPA, awesome. All while my husband was deployed or underway. He was pretty much gone those whole 2 years. Wow. And I was in graduate school, and I was raising our son, who is like 1.5, 2 at the time. And then I had my second child during my last semester of grad school. So I pretty much did it on my own.
Wow. I also did a master's program during not a deployment, but a separation. I felt like that was a little bit easier for me anyway. Did you feel, not that it's easy, but it's just kind of took one other thing of, you know, having to manage my own relationship out of the picture for me?
I totally agree with you. I think along with them being away, there come some stressors, but at the same time, it kind of really helped me focus. he wasn't a distraction. He wasn't someone I could just spend time with, you know. I put the baby to bed and then it was all about my schoolwork, you know. So yeah, in a lot of ways, it did help me stay focused, and my time management skills really had to be on point at that time, you know. So yeah, I definitely think that in ways it was more helpful with him being away.
Yeah. I think that's good to just mention, because sometimes, you know, I think when people are contemplating going back to school, they, you know, you think about what should be in place, you know, and what would make it easier for you or not easier. And yeah, I don't know. So I think it's
good. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah.
So after you got your MSW, when did you start actually being a practicing social worker?
Okay. So I graduated with my master's degree in May, and then we moved in June to Hawaii after that. So about a month after, I feel like that's where my career really kind of fell into place. I was working as a therapist, primarily in sex assault in Hawaii for a wonderful agency out there. So I feel like that's where my social work career really started.
Awesome. Okay, so what made you decide to pursue the work that you're doing today? And what are the conditions that you think need to be in place in order for you to do that, to have your career while you're living military life?
Well, I've known pretty much since high school that I wanted to be a social worker. I love this field because it's always changing. It's so dynamic and versatile. I mean, there's direct services, which is like either short-term crisis intervention, long-term therapy, foster care, at-risk youth, medical social work, homelessness, military trauma, family violence. I mean, life changes, substance abuse. There's just so much in this field. And then the non-direct services part of it, where you could work on the macro level for those who are involved in policy, fighting injustice, the field is really endless and there's always more to learn, and that's really what drew me to it. But to answer your question, what made me like pursue the work I'm doing today, I think is really about the power of healing and overcoming trauma and inspiring others. I think, in my opinion, sometimes it's difficult for people to understand why I would choose to work with violent offenders. Some of them have committed some serious crimes, you know. But the work I do, it's really about responding in a trauma-informed kind of way. It's about expressing empathy. It's holding space for others. Really just being present, just showing up in their lives in a non-judgmental way. And I think that can be really empowering for the population I serve, and as well for myself, you know. I think there's difficult days sometimes, but it can also be incredibly rewarding. I mean, sometimes I'm the first person that one of my clients may disclose a sexual assault to, or being a victim of sex trafficking, or really any type of violence in their lives, which the majority of those in the juvenile system have experienced. So just allowing them to share their story and to be heard, I think really promotes healing and growth.
That is phenomenal. I mean, it is, I can't think of, you know, much more challenging work than what you do, but I do think, you know, you have such a heart and a spirit for that. And I think that's incredibly inspiring just for anybody who's, you know, out there, trying to serve others and trying to support others. You definitely do that every day in your work, and that's great. But that, you know, and you and I have talked a lot about this, you know, about how, how, you know, I don't know if I could ever go into social work, and now here I am in a doctorate social work program. but, you know, I always tell myself, you know, how, I don't know if I could personally, you know, emotionally handle all the things that I feel like you need to handle as a social worker. And then, you know, I think about that. And then I think about adding like my own stress and my own life from being a military spouse and all of that into it. And that's a lot. And so, you know, when you are working and when you are out practicing, what are the, what do you think needs to be there? Like, what kind of support do you need to have? What kind of structure do you need to have in your life in order for you to be in your career and really focused on what you're doing professionally?
Yeah, I think what it really comes down to for me, at least, is personally, it's like setting healthy boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that can really be difficult sometimes when you have a good friend that's struggling with her marriage or mental health kind of issues there, or just need some emotional support, and I'm drained at the end of the day, you know? Sure. And sometimes that's really hard to say, listen, I can't really talk to you about this right now, but here's like a therapist, you know, I can always refer them to someone. But yeah, sometimes it does kind of suck just having to maintain those really strict boundaries because my job is really emotionally draining and I need to save some of myself for me and my family, you know? So it does, it gets hard and it kind of sucks sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah. And just having that time also to practice self-care, which I think is really important for any social worker or anybody in their lives, you know, self-care is so important. Because we definitely can't serve others if we're not taking care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I think those would be like two personal kind of conditions that I set for myself. And then as far as being a military spouse, I think, yeah, it comes with having a lot of outside support. I'm really mm-hmm. grateful for. I have amazing neighbors and friends that live in our community. And whether it's carpooling, whether it's helping my kids get to school or picking them up or you know, watching, keeping an eye on them if I run to the store. Could be anything from cooking a meal. You know, we do a lot of meal sharing. Anything like that, just having that extra support really helps. And I think it's having reliable and affordable childcare. I think that's been one of the most kind of difficult aspects of being able to get to work every day. Childcare, like subsidized childcare for the military, is hard to find because there's just like really long wait lists. Mm-hmm. So really for me to get to work every day, because my husband goes to work really early in the mornings. So it's just me in the mornings by myself, which can be a lot on its own, getting everybody to where they need to be on time and then myself. But yeah, having affordable and reliable childcare is really important. And you know, our spouses are gone a lot or they're just not reliable. They have to be where they have to be, you know, mm-hmm. even if the kids are sick, it doesn't really matter to them or their jobs at least. Mm-hmm. So in order for me to get to work, I need all three of my kids to be feeling well. I need to feel well and my babysitter needs to feel well. It's kind of a lot, you know?
Yep.
There's five of us that have to be feeling well in order for me to get to work every day.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's definitely a lot. And I fully feel you with the childcare aspect. And I think a lot of people who are trying to get back to work or even just contemplating going back to work, that's probably, if they have children, that's probably one of the biggest barriers that comes up. And it's certainly something that comes up in a lot of conversations in the military spouse employment space is, you know, how can people get reliable childcare, especially when you're moving from place to place and right. You can't always, you know,
right.
You've got to find a whole new set of childcare providers when you go. So it's definitely a challenge for everybody.
Yep.
So beyond that, and I just wanted to make sure we touched on the whole conversation about licensing and, you know, how you become, there are obviously social work is one of those careers where if you move from state to state, you know, you have to be kind of recertify yourself. And I know there's been lots of movement in the government with regard to making that easier for you. Has that affected you at all? Have things become easier for you as you've moved from, you know, let's say Hawaii to California, or, you know, how's that impacted you in your career?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely impacted me. It's hard. I think that is the most challenging aspect. Mm-hmm. I am really grateful right now that I think we will be in California long enough for me to have my license here. But I couldn't imagine having to leave like in the middle of this process and go to another state. And that's one of the reasons why I actually did not pursue my LCSW while I was in Hawaii.
Okay.
I had kind of like a feeling the time I went back to work, I wasn't sure how long we would be there. And it was just a process that I didn't really want to start knowing, sure. You know, like knowing that everything was kind of up in the air. And looking back at it now, it was kind of disappointing though, because I mean, I would be ready to sit for my boards in like February if I would have earned my hours there. But the whole process of starting hours there, finding a supervisor, finding a group supervisor, paying, you know, it could be really costly, paying for supervision, and then getting all that paperwork, and then moving to another state, and then having to start in a different state, and that comes with a whole new set of requirements. So I waited till I knew we would be in one place for a while, but it definitely was a setback. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. There is a lot to go through. I mean, and it's kind of, I know here living in Washington State, the state itself is definitely known for being one of the most friendly to military spouses and veterans, just because of how they handle things like that. And they've got a lot of dedicated resources and offices that are, you know, there to help military spouses kind of transition into the state when they've got to get licenses and things like that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And, but that's certainly not every state, you know, but hopefully that will change over time. But I definitely think it's a good thing to highlight, you know, that kind of challenge that exists for people in certain careers, even in
absolutely
in that being a barrier to, because you, know, you can't right. really help moving.
Right.
Not in control of that part.
And it really is tricky. And I know California is one of the most difficult states to get licensed in for social workers.
Mm-hmm.
So once I'm licensed, it won't be as difficult if we have to move. I think there's reciprocity because California is one of the most difficult states. However, getting licensed here is a lot.
Yeah.
They do require a lot. I mean, it's 3,000 hours. It has to be done over no shorter than 2 years, an hour of group supervision, 2 hours of group supervision, an hour of individual supervision every week, a law and ethics exam, extra coursework, and then after all of that, you can finally sit to take the exam.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a lot.
That is so much.
Yeah.
So given all of that and all the things that you have to do as a social worker, and just, you know, as a social worker who's also navigating military life, what 3 pieces of advice would you give to other military spouses that are in your field or considering going into your field? And what would you tell them about pursuing this career path while your spouse is still on active duty?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think to any military spouse in this field, my advice would be, 1 is find a mentor. Like find someone who's been through the process or knows the process of licensing really well in the state you're in. I have a great colleague right now. She's not a military spouse, but she just recently submitted her package to sit for the exams. And she was approved for it. So she knows what she's doing. She knows the mm-hmm. documentation. She knows the signature. She knows all of the paperwork because it's extensive, the application. I mean, it's like a huge binder that you have to submit of everything that they want in a specific order, you know, and you don't want to submit that and wait 3 months and have it rejected and then have to like resubmit all of that. Because every time you submit, you know, it also costs money.
Wow.
So yeah, so you really want to make sure that all your paperwork is set up. So my advice would be to definitely find someone who knows the process really well and to know exactly how to do it.
And do you have like, are there groups on Facebook or LinkedIn, or is it just from colleagues that you've met in the workplace? Like how would you go about connecting with a mentor like that?
Yeah, you know, I found my mentor through a colleague, you know, I work with her and she kind of just went through it. So it's still kind of fresh in her mind. She still has her binder and she brought it in for me to look at. There's also like group supervisor or your individual supervisor that you meet with on a regular basis, they should be familiar with the process. They talk to everybody, you know, make sure that you have all of the documentation that you need, because if that supervisor leaves and you don't have a signature, you know, it kind of really sets you back. So I would say find a mentor, somebody that's been through the process that knows exactly what they're doing and knows exactly what's expected of you.
Awesome. I think that's great advice. So find a mentor to help you get through the paperwork process even.
Yeah, because it really is expensive and it's very confusing. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of pages and lots of signatures. It really gets confusing.
Okay. What else?
I would say utilize your resources. I think that social workers were great at case management. You know, that's like a huge part of our job. Mm-hmm. So I think we should use those skills in our own lives. I know that there are scholarships that will pay for licensing exams or even for supervision. I think National Military Family Association, they provide a scholarship just mm-hmm. for licensing. And there's also, I've also heard of a resource called Give an Hour, and they are in different states. I don't think they're in like every state. I think it's kind of new. They're kind of just figuring it out, but they also provide free supervision. So there are resources. Yeah. So whether you look on social media or online or maybe through like a Fleet and Family, there's definitely resources out there. So they should definitely, you know, take advantage of that, utilize those resources.
Yeah, that's great.
I guess my last piece of advice would be don't give up. It can be really timely and it can be costly and frustrating. Mm-hmm. But my advice would be is just remember why you're in this field of work, you know, remember the difference that you're making in your community, in the world, and just remember the clients we serve, you know, and I think that that's kind of helped me push through it, you know, mm-hmm. when it gets really overwhelming and I'm frustrated, you just think about the why, go back to the why and remember why we do the work we do.
I think that is fantastic advice, because it is going through the whole process. You know, when I speak to military spouses, you have to mentally psych yourself up for going through it all, because you're handling so many other things in addition to just trying to get your career established, because especially as a military spouse, you know, your whole household is relying upon you. And it takes a lot. And then on top of that, now you're in a career field where, like you said, it takes a lot of emotional energy as well. So,
right.
You know, and I could imagine it would feel like, you know, you want to give up sometimes because of all of those things, but such good advice to kind of get yourself back in the headspace of why am I doing this in the first place? You know, who am I serving, and remembering how that really does light you up and fulfill you as a person. I think that's really great, valuable advice. What do you think employers in general, I mean, I would imagine maybe in the social work field, you don't run into too many issues about being a military spouse. I mean, outside of the licensure part, but are there things that employers of social workers could learn from your experiences going through and getting into this profession? And are there things employers can do to be more inclusive and innovative when it comes to hiring military spouse?
I think employers can learn a lot from military spouses. I think as military spouses, we come with an incredible skill set. We're resilient, we're adaptable because of all the challenges we face. We're determined to be successful. We're really dedicated and independent, and we're hardworking. So there may be employers who are reluctant to hire military spouses because we often relocate sometimes with little to no notice, which seems to be like the main concern there. Hmm. However, statistics show that the turnover rate for most people is 12 to 18 months anyway. So if you're a military spouse and you're moving every 2 years, I mean, you actually, you know, 2 to 3 years, you actually could potentially be employed longer than just an average, you know, civilian. So I think that's something to take into consideration, especially in the field of social work. I feel like because it's such an emotionally draining job, the turnover rate is, you know, pretty much every 1 to 2 years, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't think being a military spouse, you know, I don't think you should be excluded from those opportunities. I think, like, I've worked with many military spouses in this field, and I've learned so much through their diverse backgrounds, their experiences. They're educated, they're creative, they're critical thinkers, you know, so I think it is a huge disservice not to hire us. Even in Hawaii, my family, my husband got injured and we did end up leaving like a year earlier than was expected. And when I was telling my supervisor this, I was at the time, I was only there for, I would only have a full year. But when I told her this at the time, I was kind of worried about her being like, oh, why would I hire her? You know, I didn't know how that was going to affect her hiring other military spouses. But she responded by saying, I'm so grateful we had you for this year. And she would have hired me anyway, knowing I'd only be there for a year because of the skills and the knowledge that I brought. And she said I was a really great asset to the team. And there was like no hard feelings there, you know. She was just grateful to have me for the time that she did. So I think that's something worth mentioning because, you know, I had a great experience there and I learned a lot and she saw me as a valuable asset as an employee. So I think there's a lot to say about taking a chance on a military spouse.
Yeah, I think that's so awesome. And I'm so glad you brought up all those points because they're excellent points and they're absolutely true. You know, the data that's out there now about how long typical civilians keep jobs, 2 and 3 years is a long time now. You know, we're not seeing many people who are staying in lifelong careers. And I think also a lot of companies value that right now because things are changing so fast in the economy and how we're doing business. You know, just having shorter term employees is kind of a norm now. And I think that there's also a difference between maybe those civilian short-term employees versus military short-term employees. One, you know for sure what your timeline is typically as a military spouse. You know, you kind of have an idea of like, okay, we're going to be in this duty station for 2 years and I know it for the most part, you know, as long as they don't change anything on me. But you know, you have the opportunity to put your whole heart and soul into it for 2 years. Is there anything else that you wanted to say and mention before we wrap up? I have had a fantastic time listening to you. And as always, I admire what you do and I admire how you go about thinking and strategizing for yourself, how you're going to manage all that. So thanks for sharing that. Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we wrap up?
Thank you so much for talking with me. This has been a lot of fun. And I think, you know, with being a military spouse, there are a lot of benefits to it, you know, and I think it is possible to have a career and be a military spouse and have a family, you know, it's a lot to manage, but I think it is feasible. So you shouldn't give up on that.
I love it. Thanks so much, Alex.
Hey, thanks for listening to this fourth episode of So Unbecoming. Alex is one of the main reasons I decided to apply for the DSW program at USC. I do not have a social work background, but she encouraged me to look into it more critically, and I couldn't be happier about my decision. The work she does is incredible, and I admire her so much for what she does to serve the world and how she inspires other military spouses with her story. Next week, I'll be speaking with Army spouse, clinical social worker Amy Olivera Sanchez, and I can't wait for you to hear her story. Remember, I'm publishing a new episode every Tuesday. The show is now available on 8 different platforms, so make sure you check out sounbecoming.com to see which ones you can listen on. I'm now on Facebook, and my Twitter handle is at UNBpodcast, so please let me know you're out there. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you join me next time on So Unbecoming. Bye for now.